Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, we need no introductions, but we'll give them anyway. There's Castle, there's Phil Perry, and here's Mac Jones talking Wednesday about his first hostile challenge in the National Football League.
I mean, I've been to a lot of cool stadiums and stuff, and I've been both, you know, the backup quarterback and the starter. So, I mean, that's college, and I haven't really played a ton of NFL games, so this will be new for me, but I know a lot of guys on the team have played in a lot of big games, and at the end of the day, you just got to block out the noise as best you can, and it's going to be loud, and you just have to prepare yourself mentally for that, and that's pretty much all you can do. I mean, you can look at the past and see what you've gone through, but you won't be able to experience it until it happens. So,
all right, Matty boy, you look great. You're glowing. Oh,
thanks. Yeah, I was in California last week. I'm not going to lie.
Breathtakingly handsome, isn't he, Phil?
Yeah,
it's annoying.
Oh, come on, Phil.
Phil's handsome,
Sorry,
too.
You look great. You look great. No, it's okay.
I got to bring it with personality. Okay. Is Buffalo really unique in terms of atmosphere and noise?
To be honest, no. I mean, when I went there, right, I even played there, but at the same time, I played against them as an opponent, and it's a fun atmosphere, but the stadium's not huge, right? And it's a very similar to that college atmosphere. You come in, the experience itself is unique because you come in, you see the Bills Mafia, the fans. They've got a great venue there. Everybody's barbecuing, having fun. They're saying some obnoxious stuff to you as you come in, and as you can only, and you can only imagine some of the signals that they do with their hands and stuff like that. And then once you get in there, though,
like that.
Yeah, like that. Just
like this.
Yeah, just, hey, like Notre Dame fans. Hey, how are you?
You stink. Come on
in. Yeah, you stink. But then for visitors, like when you come in, the one thing that is unique is that that locker room is probably as bad as any other than maybe Kansas City, right? It's just you're crammed on top of each other, and then you come out. And the other part about Buffalo, the only other part I'd say that's really tough to play there is the weather. There's a factor of weather always when you go there.
And it looks like there's going to be some weather. It looks like there's an 80% chance of snow. So on top of the atmosphere, that'll be new for Mac Jones. I mean, remember last year in college, it was a COVID impacted college season when it came to the crowd. So even last year when he was a full-time starter for the first time, really didn't see that same kind of raucous environment that a typical SEC quarterback would face. So I am really interested to see how it plays out. I understand what Matt's saying about the crowd not being always incredibly amped up. But I just wonder if it's a little different on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you
got
be.
All day to get lubed up and get really into it. I feel like they're going to be hyped for this one.
Oh, plus the magnitude of this game. And when I'm talking about the Buffalo Bills of old, it was the one where by the end of the first quarter or the first half, the game's over and they kind of go back out and it's like, let's go barbecue. It's better than the game. This is going to be all hands on deck, screaming, yelling. It'll be an incredible environment to play a football game in. There's no doubt about that.
Especially, and I talked about this last week, the Bills had their receipts. Look, we were supposed to have at least a 4 or 5 year reign. It was contractually agreed upon that the Patriots were dead, and now they're back alive. I mean, it's interesting to see the way the Patriots have not only quickly risen, but how Buffalo is treating it. Interestingly, Sean McDermott this week apparently referred to the Patriots as the first place Patriots in addressing his team in the media. So that's kind of maybe a little, I mean, that's a well-applied needle to the Bills, to the players. So you guys, you're not in first place anymore. Here's what Bill Belichick, meanwhile, had to say about the sound situation in Buffalo and just in general.
We prepare for it every week, so it's probably loud, Arthur, in practices in the game. Either way, it's loud. So, yeah, I don't know.
All right, Matt, is that true? I mean, Does Bill Belichick have his players' ears bleeding out on the practice field because of how loud they make it out there? We've heard it in training camp, but is that possible that it's louder in practice than it would be in a stadium like Buffalo's?
I mean, they have an amazing speaker system out there, and they blare music or sound all practice long. Your ears are buzzing, and they do it even for the offensive side of the ball as you're getting in the huddle, because they anticipate that communication that has to take place. You have to be crisp. You have to pay attention, focus on the task at hand, and also getting the play and getting up to the line of scrimmage. So they do it all week long to prepare you for that environment. So once you get out on the field, nothing's unexpected. You've worked your silent counts. You've worked your communication and all the stuff that needs to go along with operating at a high level on the road, which is always more challenging for an offensive unit. There's no doubt about that.
How often have you seen it impact the actual offensive product? I mean,
right.
We see the false start counts in some stadiums. Obviously, we remember Phil and I very well, and you probably, I'm sure, too, the 2015 AFC Championship game in Denver, where Von Miller was just motoring past the Patriots edge offensive linemen on both sides because they couldn't hear the snap count. They couldn't react quickly enough. But is that has to be the extreme exception, is it?
Well, that's the exception, is usually for those offensive line and also those guys on the outer edge, right? Your tackles, because they've got to look in and see a ball snap. There's no cadence when you're going silent count. So they're relying on ball movement and reaction. And that's where the defense has an advantage. But from a wide receiver standpoint, they just look in and they're supposed to focus in on the ball. And then when you have the check with me's, it's about the quarterback going up and down the line of scrimmage, again, communicating to the offensive line and communicating to those wide receivers. And then the other part of it, I'd say, is the 2-minute drill, right? Because 2-minute drills are always loud at the end of the half, at the end of a game, you're going trying to get a score, the crowd's into it, they understand the situation, and so it's all the hand signals, the communication, and getting to the line of scrimmage and making sure the snap count, you're going with the silent count. So
it could really screw with you, though.
It can. I mean,
0 to 10, how much can a hostile stadium 0 to 10 impact you?
I'd say at least a 4 or 5 if you're not on it. Like, and you're going to practice it all week, but it's a different environment too. When you're revved up, your adrenaline's going, and those offensive tackles start to see, hey, this guy's getting off the ball, I don't have any help. They want to kick back early, and even a small flinch or a movement inside to stunt into a different look, that sometimes will just trigger a guy to jump off sides. It's tough. There's no doubt.
Well, and in a game like this one, where we are all, I think, expecting it to be close, where there's a lot on the line, it might only need to, the sound might only need to impact one play,
mm-hmm.
one penalty, yeah. one bad call, one missed check at the line of scrimmage, and that could help determine the outcome. So I am really interested to see how Mac Jones handles this as a rookie quarterback. Matt, what was the loudest stadium you ever had to play in?
Gosh, Seattle was really loud. I mean, because they're on top of you. That was loud. Kansas City, when it would get rocking, look, I was there as an opponent, and I was also there playing for 4 years. And when that stadium gets going, it's as loud as any stadium. New Orleans was a loud environment. I mean, when they get to third down, they go, here we come to get you. And they pump it in the whole stadium singing. I mean, the old Dallas stadium was so loud that Vinny Testaverde, when I was there, put in earplugs in his ear so he could drown out some of the noise, because he just was an old man at that point. And he's like, hey, look, I don't need to deal with this noise. It was hilarious. So, I mean, there's a lot
what
of
about
loud
Denver?
Stadiums. Denver's all, I mean, all those guys, and it's vertical, right? And it's like a bowl, and it's right on top of you. And so there's a lot of loud stadiums, but I mean, Bills, comparatively speaking to some of those that I just mentioned, isn't as loud, but the environment is definitely exciting and fun to play in.
What about Gillette when it gets going? Top 10 when it gets going, top 15 when it gets going. I mean, they've had a lot to cheer about, which means at times it takes a lot to get the people off their hands.
Right. And that's the one part about Gillette. Some of these other stadiums, it's from start to finish. Gillette is kind of more of the team that goes, understands good football, understands that they're doing something right, celebrate the good times, and just understand that they can sit back and watch the game as it kind of goes on. So I'd say top 15, maybe 20.
Oh,
yeah, not super loud. It's just not super loud.
It's not, but it's intimidating. There's a lot of looks. They give it a lot of dirty looks.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the what's the vilest fan base that you dealt with? Most foul?
Philly was Philly's pretty, takes the cake, I think. Philly, New York Jets were pretty brutal. And then the Buffalo Bills. It's mainly those East Coast teams, right? Those East Coast teams like to.
What about those Raiders? What about the Raiders when you were in Kansas City?
That's a good point. The Raiders is, but they're more of a violent, scary fan base. Like just the way that they dress up and they act and like it's a lot of throat slashing and stuff at you. And I'm like, well, okay, this is still just a football game, everybody. And normally there's at least four or five fights in the stand. So it's a little bit different than just your typical banter, you know, tuck your ears in rabbit and then scream obscenities at you the entire game.
Castle, you suck.
I get that all the time. I hope you break. I hope you break your leg. I've gotten before. It's just great stuff.
You ever gotten hit with a projectile?
No, I haven't. Luckily, you know, I haven't been hit with a projectile. Now there's been people throwing snowballs, particularly in Buffalo. They love to throw snowballs if it's snowing. It's great. And then the security guard points up at the stands and said, you're going to be out of here if you do. And they don't know who that does it. And then it comes back 2 minutes later.
And then they might throw something else.
Maybe. They might.
You don't know how much you missed, Matt, growing up on the West Coast, not having the opportunity to throw snowballs as a kid.
I know. I mean, I did miss that. I feel deprived as a child. Just I didn't get that experience.
He lived here long enough, though. I bet he was chucking snowballs.
Yeah, but there's nothing like throwing a snowball as a kid.
I don't know. As an adult, true. It's pretty fun, too, after a few pops. Let's go.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, let's get into this matchup. I'm going to take my glasses off for this. Look it. The Bills and the Patriots, as of last year, I said, man, they're going to have the hand in this quarterback situation for a long time. It's Cam Newton. And what are the Patriots going to do? Is it going to be Stidrock? Who knows? All of a sudden, they got themselves a Mac Jones. And we can actually have a conversation about who you'd rather have. I was on WEEI on Wednesday, and I was asked that question. And after some hemming and hawing, really informed by Phil's statistical-based bashing of Mac Jones, I said, I'm still going to take Josh Allen. He never bashed
Josh Allen. He is a quarterback basher.
I'm not bashing Josh Allen either. Man. I call him a top 10 quarterback.
You hate
it's
all
slanderous. Go on.
I eventually selected Josh Allen because I would rather rein in the wild stallion that I found on the high chaparral. Okay. Then take the little hothouse flower that is Mac Jones and try and add things to his game. Be that as it may, Josh Allen has thrown 62 touchdowns and 20 picks since the start of last year. He has had one of the most drastic arcs of improvement I've ever seen at the quarterback position. We'd all agree on that. He makes plays that drop your jaw, but he also, in that playing style, Matt Castle, he's also going to make plays that make you go, oh. Who would you rather have, Matt?
Josh Allen still to this point. I mean, and I understand what you're saying. He is a wild card at times in terms of his play and forcing balls downfield or trying to make a play when maybe he should just eat it or throw it away. But he's so dynamic, particularly when it gets to third down. You watched the Saints game last week, and there were so many times where guys aren't open downfield and he scrambles, makes plays with his legs, picks up a first down, extends a drive. And he's special in that form of quarterback play, because there's not a lot of guys that can throw the ball the way that he does as accurately, and then can run the zone read. And then at the same time, drop back and he's in the pocket and you're worried about the dangerous weapons that they have. And all of a sudden he takes off and you don't have a spy on him and he gets 40 yards. I mean, he's the second leading rusher on the team behind Singletary. And this guy's, he's just got so much talent that it's hard to figure out how to address it when you're a defensive opponent going up against them, because they have the weapons and then you have to account for him running the ball.
I think he's a top 10 quarterback solidly. I'm still high on him. I just feel like I might not be as high as some others. I think he's number three in the MVP voting for this year right now. I think he's taken a little bit of a step back since last year. I think he's regressed a little bit, which honestly was to be expected because he had such a ridiculous year, especially with some of the throws that he's 100%. Making where he's off his back foot, outside the pocket, down the sideline, on a dime. Hard to repeat that year after year after year. He is still an excellent quarterback. Again, I would have him probably in the 6 or 7 range, I think, right now. So that's not as high as some others.
Would you rather have him than Mac?
I would, yes. Certainly. I think where it becomes a discussion is when you're talking about the contract. So if you want to talk about how much you have to pay Josh Allen versus Mac Jones and the situation you can surround Mac Jones with versus Josh Allen, then I do think it becomes a conversation as to which team is better set up for the next few years. Because right now we're already seeing it, I think, in Buffalo. Their offensive line's not very good.
Right.
Period. New paragraph. Like, it's just the running game isn't there because of that. It's forcing him to drop back and pass 40, 50 times a game. And on a lot of those, because again, the offensive line's not great, he has to scramble around and he makes some of these mistakes that you're talking about, Tom. So I think it's not a discussion in terms of the individual player right now, but when you factor in the money, then it becomes a conversation.
Funny too, because when you have homegrown talent, and the Bills have that, Tremaine Edmonds, Poyer, Tre'Davious White, Micah Hyde is homegrown too, yeah? Josh Allen.
He spent some time in Green Bay.
Been there for a long time.
But all those guys are homegrown. The Patriots have had to confront that time after time after time, and some guys go someplace else, Trey Flowers being the first name that occurs to me. You can't pay them all, and that gets hard for a front office to deal with, and that's what Buffalo is going to confront. I mean, the Patriots have arguably, as Phil has pointed out, and I've come to realize, it's the most valuable asset in professional sports. A good quarterback on a rookie contract. You can do anything personnel-wise. This is Daniel Jeremiah. Phil's done a great job with the Next Pats podcast, getting some outside guests who've given some great insight. And Daniel Jeremiah, of course, from NFL Media, has a scouting background, was with Bill Belichick with Cleveland way back, and he makes his dough on TV bringing those assessments here. Here's what Daniel Jeremiah had to say to Phil about trucks and trailers and Mac Jones.
I think that they built the team and the way he was initially used early on in the season, I think you very much would say he was kind of the trailer being pulled by the rest of the team, that great defense, their ability to run the football when they wanted to. I thought that the play calling, the setup, the design, all the screens, all the different things to make it comfortable for him. I did feel like that he was kind of, they were getting where they wanted to go, but he was kind of being pulled by the group. And I think as the season's going along, you're starting to see some, I guess we'd say some truck tendencies, where there's been times where they're starting to let him do some other things and try and make those around him better and pull the team. So to me, he's still in the trailer category. But I think you're starting to see their confidence in him grow, his confidence grow, to start putting the ball more in his hands and letting him try and, you know, make those others around him better. This is not something that he's going to be forever classified as a trailer. I think he's got some truck upside there.
So one quick thing, Tom, Daniel Jeremiah actually didn't work under Bill at Cleveland, but he worked for the Ravens, which obviously was a Browns spinoff, but he did work under Ozzie Newsome, who was part of the Bill Belichick tree for a long time. So I think they have some similar opinions in terms of how they view players.
Right.
And so I just find this device very interesting. The truck versus trailer thing. He's a trailer now, maybe more so than a truck, but he's shown truck tendencies. So Matt, will we see Mac Jones become a full-time truck here in the near future?
That's such a tough question, because the way that the offensive scheme set up, right, they rely sometimes heavily on the run, play action, quick game. And so it doesn't allow him to be the lead dog, the Mack truck, right? But then there's games like Tampa Bay where they can't run the ball to save their lives. They had negative one rushing yard. And so therefore they've got to throw the ball. And he did a tremendous job that entire game. It put him in a position to win late with the field goal. And so there are times, like you said, where I agree with the evaluation of he has been a truck. There's been games where he's been outstanding. The Cleveland Browns, third down truck. He's driving this offense. He's making them go. But at the end of the day, there's so many different this offense is so versatile in how they approach different opponents that there might be a chance where he is a truck some games and then other times he's a trailer and he has to be the guy that just puts them in the right position, gets them in the right call, makes the right checks at the line of scrimmage, which I also think is part of driving the truck, right? So, but in terms of a guy that takes over games all the time and consistently they rely on him solely, I wouldn't say that he's going to ever become that guy just because of the offense and the way that it's set up.
And that's a, it's not a really a setup that is, in my opinion, sustainable, but it is a setup that evolves from what Phil was talking about when you are pouring 18 to 22% of your salary cap into that position. So it's a Rodgers, a Mahomes, a Justin Herbert, and, you know, at times a Tom Brady, but Brady has understood what the value of being a trailer is too. So it doesn't have to revolve around him. He loves trailer days. Loves them.
They're the best.
Well, listen, I mean, when did Tom Brady become a truck? Was it 06?
That was
04? I mean, they still had great running games and defenses really right through those first three Super Bowls.
Well, like Matt said, there's truck days. You got guys who are hurt. Can you go be the truck today? We don't have our running game. We're missing our interior offensive lineman. Can you be a truck for us, son? I'll be a truck. Listen, one of the two challenges I see that Buffalo poses that are unique for the Patriots is they have a faster and smarter defense than the Patriots have really encountered, especially on the back end and in the back seven. And they have a more intricate offense. Phil, agreeance?
Agreed. And I think especially what they do with their safeties, Poyer and Hyde, when they can interchange those guys in terms of whether they are buzzing down or they're, you know, they're playing split safety coverage before the snap and then it's single safety or, you know, however they use those guys to just try to confuse what Mac Jones is seeing, I think could be an issue because I think we saw them do that a little bit with Dean Pease in Atlanta. And I think it gave Mac Jones trouble at times. So I'm sure they'll see that again. It gave Tom Brady, trouble at times. So that to me is going to be the biggest maybe roadblock to success for Mac Jones on Monday.
Right. This is one of the more challenging defenses, probably the most challenging defense that he's gone up to in terms of scheme, because like you said, they have so much versatility in the back end with Poyer, with Hyde, not only that, but this is a veteran group that's played together for a long time. They've got good defensive rush guys. And the linebackers at the second level can all run. Tremaine Edmonds is good. AJ Klein is outstanding. And then Matt Milano is one of those guys that can play on the defensive line, play back. And then you never want to put a back on him in protection. And so what they'll do is they stress your protection schemes all the time. They walk guys up in the A gaps, and that's very difficult because it's called double mug is what we refer to it as, but then they'll rotate a safety down, but you can't believe your lying eyes because at the snap he'll rotate back and they'll bring the nickel off the slot. So the biggest challenge for Mac Jones this week is understanding, hey, look, I've taken away an issue. I'm protecting one side of the ball. However, I have to know where my issue is if they now fire the nickel off the slot because they love to bring secondary pressure. They're going to give you a multitude of looks. And at the same time, the personnel is going to change up front too. And you have to always be alert to not put that back on a guy like Matt Milano because he'll run through him. He's like a defensive end.
And when you say nickel off the slot and a double mug, he's talking about two guys coming up in the A gap going like this. And then at the snap, he rotates back into coverage. One of the guys in the A-gap comes when he says nickel off the slot. It's that extra defensive back who is in coverage on the slot receiver. He's closer, the slot is, so that means it's not a long ride, and he's already got separation because he's off of the tackle. Did I astutely just
– You know what? It sounded really good to me. And the other part of it is hard on the back because he's got responsibility for one of those defenders in that A gap, right?
And he has to look.
When he steps up, now he's got to find and relocate his eyes out to the nickel coming off. And sometimes that's hard because they'll bluff they'll step up and then he'll drop out and they'll bring that guy. And now he's got to get over there and redirect himself to get out for protection. So again, you have to know your hots in this game. And not only that, you have to understand the coverage scheme in the back end, because those corners, a lot of times in the Sean McDermott scheme, they'll trap. So when you have outside breaking routes in the slot and you bring somebody off, they're going to try to jump that route quickly and put emphasis on rallying to the hot, because they know that there's no potential way of you picking it up unless you're in a seven-man protection.
Which could be really difficult on the Patriots, Tom, because Mac Jones throws outside the numbers a lot. And I think a lot of that is because they've run the ball so well that oftentimes they don't see split safety coverage. They see single safety coverage. So there's an extra body in the box, which usually means you've got one-on-ones on the outside. Right. Mm-hmm. So Mac Jones has been pretty good in terms of taking advantage of those. But if they're playing some of these different coverages and they're trying to bait him a little bit, that's something he's going to have to watch out for.
Matt, you've worked with Brian Daboll, former Patriots coach, correct? At some point, you must have.
Yes, he was our offensive coordinator in Kansas City my last year there.
Okay. Does he have patriotic tendencies? I think he's really good at what he does, and he'll obviously at some point get himself into a head coaching conversation, but his script against New Orleans on Thanksgiving night, I thought was awesome. They started that game great. How big a role can he play against the Patriots defense, which is playing better than anybody in the league right now?
Right. I think Brian Daboll is an outstanding coordinator. He again, very similar to Josh McDaniels. They lived together when I was there, right? He was the receivers coach, Josh McDaniels was the quarterback coach and called plays, but they would game plan together and all that. At the same time, he has the same basic fundamentals and understanding for the defense. He started on the defensive side of the ball. He understands that. So he can put together a really good game plan. And with the skill position, you can see the growth that not only Josh Allen's had, but also Brian Daboll in that system. They've continued to add pieces to it. They love 11 personnel. We'll get into a little bit of 12, but they're going to spread it out. And they're going to, he's also going to utilize Josh Allen, his legs, zone read off that. They're going to run boots. They have a good complex passing game in which he can progress and then at the same time cut the field in half. So Brian Daboll understands how he wants to call the game, and he's definitely an asset to this team, and the fact that he's been there for so long and he has a great understanding for the personnel that he has there.
And the personnel that he has is great weapons, right? Mm-hmm. I call them the greatest show on turf, which they are when you look at their receivers and their quarterback. But when it comes to their running game, I think he knows what he has there too. And it's why they don't want to run the football all that much. They are in one score situations. They are the least likely team to run the football in the NFL. Their run rate is right about 33% of the time in one score situations this year. The Patriots, on the other hand, are at the total opposite end of the spectrum. They're second only to San Francisco, who we know loves to run the football as well. So two very different styles of offense in Western New York this I almost said this weekend, but it's a Monday night game. Come on.
It's a Monday night. Phil, how much does the loss of Duggar, perhaps, who's in COVID protocol, impact the Patriots with one particular matchup?
Yeah, this could be sneaky important. And I want to hear what Castle has to say on this too. But number one, I think it does make it harder to defend Dawson Knox, who for them is a really important player. You know, I think he's probably one of their toughest players. And so if you don't have somebody that matches great on the other side, I think that makes your job a little bit tougher. Maybe it's Adrian Phillips if Duggar can't play. But Matt, do you think not having Duggar, because the Patriots like their big nickel personnel, their three safeties on the field as much as they do, and because the Bills like 11 personnel as much as they do, like I would assume the Patriots want to have as many defensive backs on the field as possible for a lot of this game. And they're probably not going to have one of their best. So is that a big deal?
It's a big deal because of the matchup issues that you have. I mean, not only you have Cole Beasley, you got Emmanuel Sanders that you got to worry about, Stephon Diggs, who's their leading receiver. Knox has 7 TDs in the red zone. So they're going to have a formula down there in the red zone in particular, whether it's a double team, whether it's hitting him before because he's had a lot of success in the red zone. And it's not just route patterns. It's also the boots and him slashing behind the line of scrimmage, catching, falling in like he did against the Saints. So it's definitely important because you're going to want big nickel, big dime packages in which you can still, you know, have a spy on Josh Allen, because you're going to have to have somebody athletic enough to spy a guy like that. So having people that are versatile and can run around and actually play different positions, play linebacker positions, still be in the box is going to be an important factor in this game. There's no doubt.
When was the last time the Patriots faced, you know, some of the years they just see quarterback after quarterback with that ability, but when was the last time
Tannehill? I mean, Tannehill could run.
Right? Yeah, you're right. He's like their second run.
Right. But nobody that really this year, I would say no offense that you're sitting there and you're worried about the zone run scheme, right? And a quarterback that can take off and get 20 if you overplay one side. So you have to, this is going to be about discipline for our defense, right? Discipline, remain in your lanes, don't overcommit to anything. And so it's different, comparatively speaking, to any of the offenses that they've played this year because of the quarterback position.
I think one sneaky potential returnee, right? If you're without Duggar, if you could get Jamie Collins back for this game, that might help because he can run and he's a big body who, you know, they might trust in coverage a little bit on some of these tight ends. So that to me would be a nice swap. It wouldn't be a one for one because they play different positions, but if you could get Collins back, that could be key.
All right. Well, there's your matchup. There's your quarterbacks. There's your noise factor. And here's what's at stake. The Patriots are 8-4. The Buffalo is 7-4. Obviously, head-to-head is the first tiebreaker. But here's where it's interesting. The Patriots are 2-1 in the division right now. Buffalo is 3-0. Patriots lose this game. They drop to 2-2. Buffalo is 4-0. So even if the Patriots are able to get the second head-to-head, the next tiebreaker becomes division record within the division. So even if they split and the two teams wind up tied in overall record, it'll go to division record. So this is a very important game for the Patriots. And we're going to have all kinds of coverage for you all weekend long. So make sure you keep up with us. Fellas, it was terrific.
It was a pleasure. I can't wait Monday night, baby.
You guys are great.